Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to a triumphant edition of the Macko and Cause podcast. Bob, the Raptors are in the NBA Finals. That's nuts.
We did it, man.
We did it.
We did it.
It's all us, not Masai Ujiri.
Bless you.
It's also the allergy edition of the show. I have very squinty eyes. I've been rubbing my eyes a lot. And Bob, you, as you said, you're not exactly a treat either.
You heard me, I think, from the hallway.
Yeah.
Started right out of the elevator. I described it once as it feels like a raccoon is pissed in my eyes.
How Toronto. Of course, it'd be raccoon.
Ooh, local.
Ooh, exactly. I mean, a ton to get to with the Raptors. We got some listener questions. I got my top five funniest people alive today. And it was tough to do. Like, I got a lot of also-rans. So, a lot to get into the show. But where do you want to start? Do you want to start on the game itself? Like,
let's just
do you want to go micro and then macro?
Let's
how do you want to
start where you were.
Okay.
And I let me preface this by saying, everybody loves the Raptors, but you and I have been there since day one.
Yep.
I'm not trying to like flex and act like, oh, we're such big shots. But just to put context on this, from 1995, you and I have loved the Raptors. And you and I were an anomaly at TSN because most people were hockey first.
Yeah.
You were probably football first when I first met you.
Yeah, football first, basketball second.
Right. But you and I had a love of basketball that was distinct.
Yeah.
In the TSN. I think it's changed now.
Oh, yeah.
That was 15 years ago, and you have a whole new generation of kids who grew up with the Raptors, and they're more into it.
That was 20 years ago, Bob. That wasn't 15. That was 20.
Just, let's just stick with
20
15.
Years ago. I remember, like, and for me, basketball, it started to come in my life in the early 90s when the John Starks, Charles Oakley, Charles Smith, Patrick Ewing, Anthony Mason, Derek Harper, that Knicks team. And I love that Knicks team. And then, you know, I followed them. I was a Knicks fan first, you know, and it was conflicted when Knicks played the Raptors in the playoffs. But yeah, that's where my sort of basketball-ness came from.
My love goes back to the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I know this sounds
what
really
weird. What a one-upper.
No, I didn't, but I was really into Marvel Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel Comics to me meant New York City. And then New York City kind of meant playground basketball. Dr. J was really popular. And there was this one particular ad at the back of Marvel Comics. And it was Dr. J and Rick Barry playing one-on-one.
I remember those. I remember that. Yes, I totally remember that.
And I remember being so fascinated by Dr. J's ability to take off. I think in the ad it was somewhere in his own end.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was quite a dunk.
And without a
hence
running start, just stood there.
Just stood there and elevated.
I fully remember that. Those ads.
So anyway, here we are. Started from the bottom. Now we're here. Where were you? Where'd you watch the game?
I was up at my cottage because I was opening it because everything was delayed this year just because of all the flooding that's been going on in Southern Ontario. So it was just me, my cousin Dave, and his girlfriend. And it was an eerie, like, I took a picture during the day, and there was a raven sitting on top of the gazebo. It looked like Game of Thrones.
Do you think it was maybe a harbinger?
Someone
was coming from another realm to let you know?
The joke I made was, it was a message from Bran apologizing. but it was great. Like, watch the game there. And the funny thing is, before that 26-3 run, my cousin Dave wasn't feeling great, was starting to fall asleep on the couch because you know how that is.
Couple wines, you're up at the cottage.
Exactly. And, you know, his girlfriend, like, I could tell there were a couple minutes from bailing. I wouldn't blame them. But then the turn happened and just a ton of fun.
When they were down 18-4, I wasn't that worried because, you know, you got a whole game left.
Yeah.
And they hadn't really started the engine. When they were down 15 in the third, though, that didn't feel so good.
And Larry and Gasol both had four fouls on them. Like you could see the headlines of another game seven.
I got invited to a couple parties to go watch the game, and I just turned them all down.
Yeah,
because I don't want to watch with anyone. There is video of me. Maybe we'll post it on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
But there's video of me. My wife, the wise guy, is sitting there on the couch filming me. I got so nervous with about 4 minutes left. I couldn't sit down.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to pace. So I just shadow boxed the TV.
Yeah.
Bless you. I shadow boxed the TV for about 5 minutes. And then we won.
Oh, yeah.
Again, we won.
Of course. They lose, we win. That's how it works in sports. I was doing a lot of pacing, aggressive pacing, jumping up on the table, demanding high fives when high fives were not even asked for. So yeah, that's how I watched it.
I suppose the only way we can really do this, because we're 2 days out, so everybody's now settling in. I don't think we've made the turn yet to look at Golden State. I think people are still basking in the
glow. Still basking.
Like still basking. Yeah. Why don't I just throw out names and we can discuss them as we go along?
All right. Well, the first is, let's just go to the number one name, Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the first name is either Kawhi Leonard or Masai Ujiri, followed closely by Kyle Lowry.
But let's do Kawhi. It feels like, where else could you really start? He looks like the best basketball player in the world.
He's the best right now.
In these playoffs, May 27th, right now.
Yeah.
He is the best basketball player in the world. And I think what was always going to be, like, the points and the dunk and the timeliness of his run, you know, like that, as you said, the 26-3 run, it started because basically Kawhi said, we're not going to lose.
Yeah.
And the next 10 straight points were directly related to him. 80 mm-hmm. scored, one he dished off to Serge.
Yeah.
So, but my point here is the defense, though. We're always going to remember the points. We're always going to remember the dunks, but the defense on Giannis.
For the series, Giannis, when he was guarded by Kawhi, 12 of 34. So just over 30%. 1 of 7 from three, 5 assists versus 5 turnovers. The regular season MVP just got dunked on by the playoff MVP.
It's one of the more dominant performances I can remember seeing. And we tend to define dominance in terms of offense.
Yeah.
LeBron averages a triple-double. Isn't that incredible? But his ability, Kawhi's ability, to post regularly high 20s, mid-30s, and then deliver. Like, for a guy who had load management, maybe everybody should have load management if you think you're going to be a playoff team. Because honestly, he looks like he has... Everyone else is playing with one tank, and he's got two scuba tanks out there.
And when you look on Game 5, his career high in the playoffs, 9 assists... all led to threes. But more than that, most of them led to uncontested threes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look at...
So open.
We look at Fred VanVleet in Game 5, went 7 of 9. 4 of those 7 that he made were wide open as a direct result of Kawhi Leonard driving the entire Milwaukee defense, collapsing and leaving wide open opportunities. Like, when I look at Kawhi Leonard, I was amazed by the scoring, the playmaking, and the defense. It was three different things he was doing.
17 rebounds in the last game. Uh-huh. 17 rebounds. I believe it's a career high for him. Okay, so here's a weird question, but maybe not so weird. Winning makes you popular.
Yep.
But has Kawhi suddenly become likable? I know we love him. I know we admire him.
Yeah.
But has he suddenly become likable, or am I imagining this?
You're imagining. You know, because there's nothing really that's changed from him. We're paying even more. He is the deliverer of sports happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is the deliverer of the highest level of sports happy we've had here in ages. You know, he's given us, through this 1 year, he's given us more than Austin Matthews or Marner or even Jose Bautista. You know, go up and down the list. The only guy more dominant was Roger, that you could argue was those 2 year run of Roger Clemens. When not only did win Cy Young's, he just destroyed everyone.
Yeah, he was 24-10.
Yeah, but like he you know, best ERA, best innings, all that kind of stuff. But those Jays teams never made the playoffs, so it doesn't count to the same level.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with that. I think he's become likable, and I think one of the reasons is the Toronto sports media made his, you know, is he staying, is he going, that drama, the only thing we talked about when it came to Kawhi, or load management.
Yeah.
But he actually has quite a history, like his personal story. He's a quiet guy, but... only really in the last couple of rounds have we ever started to talk about Kawhi the person.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he's quiet. And I know he's not fun. He's not exactly Shaq out there.
Yeah.
He's not Shaqed in the Fool.
Well, he doesn't give you much.
No. But in a way, though, when you find out more about his life, his reserve and his dedication to just his craft and his family,
mm-hmm.
maybe I appreciate this because I also don't go out much. And I just want to do my work and hang out with my family.
Yeah.
In an era where everybody has to be Instagram famous, he doesn't even have an account.
Nope.
I kind of grudgingly look at this and say, okay, if you're going to be that guy, I admire it. I think it's principled.
Oh, yeah. Well, because just everyone in his peer group is doing one thing. He's doing He's doing it completely different.
Oh, my God. Like, Russell Westbrook goes to the arena, and he looks like a pinata made by Louis Vuitton.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's so true. The preening, the peacocking that goes on. And
he's
that's
not, he's not a brand.
No.
Everybody in the NBA has become a brand, for better or for worse, and you and I generally like it.
Yeah, for generally like it, but it, you know, I think some guys go a little over the top with it, and you know, Kyrie Irving spent a lot of time making movies in the offseason, but whatever. I mean, it's your life. But, yeah, with Kawhi, they're... His brand is mystery. His brand is just silence. And I was trying to think, like, what's the best comparable? And the one that I came up with, he's Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men.
Wow, I was going to say Tom Brady, but...
No, he's Anton
Chigurh. Wow.
Anton Chigurh was the ultimate metaphor for the inevitability of death.
Mm-hmm.
That it, no matter what you do, it is coming. And that's sort of been Kawhi Leonard in these playoffs. It's just like, heads or tails, call it. You know, and that's who he's been throughout this entire playoffs. And it's admirable to watch because we're seeing greatness at its best.
It reminds me a bit, like, for people who are younger, they don't remember Michael when Michael was peak Michael.
Mm-hmm.
But in the playoffs, when they needed a bucket, he would just find a slightly open space, elevate, and hit that little fadeaway jumper.
Yeah.
And it was money in the bank. And he might chuck a ton of shots. You know, he's a bit like Grant Fuhr this way in that, sure, he was going to make his misses, but he would always get the things he needed, right? You always knew that Jordan was going to pull this one out.
Yeah.
And Kawhi is starting to take on that, again, Chigurh-like sense of inevitability.
If it was almost any other player when they were down 18-4 or down by 15 in the third or down 0-2 to Milwaukee or down 2-1 to Philly, our nervousness level would have been higher. But you just look over there at that, you know, at that life jacket named Kawhi Leonard, and it made you feel good. It just it gave you some reassurance.
Can you remember a basketball player ever where the thing you talk about the most in terms of their skill set or their gifts is their hands? I can't, you know, you talk about someone's ups.
Yeah.
You talk about their shooting stroke or they got speed. But people, they call him the claw.
Yeah.
I can't remember a single player where you say his defining characteristic is his enormous, powerful mitts.
Nope, we don't. He's an anomaly. I remember listening to the Lebertard show, and I forget which ESPN basketball guy they had on, but they were saying that J.J. Redick actually has more athleticism than Kawhi Leonard. But there's just some weird... perfect combination of enough athleticism, intelligence, size, and those giant hands, and just his mindset, where he could dominate anyone. It's crazy.
You know, I was reading a good piece. I can't remember who it was from. It was on The Athletic, and it might have been Sean Fitzgerald. So we'll give Sean the credit, even if he didn't do it.
Was it poorly written? Because then it was probably him.
Yeah, it was
burn.
No, it was good. So it was Blake Murphy. they were talking about geometry and how his favorite subject growing up was math.
Yeah.
And his favorite part of math was geometry and how that's his game. Is his mind is like that HAL 9000 computer. It scans the defense and figures out exactly what he needs to do.
What are you doing, Giannis? 2001 joke, everybody.
Yeah. Going back to 1968. Matt Cause, ladies and gentlemen.
We are bringing in the young people.
Ooh, timely.
Okay. Masai Ujiri.
Who's been very quiet.
Been very quiet. There's been no F Brooklyn. Masai Ujiri is a perfect combination of courage and ruthless.
Mm.
You know, just, I mean, those ruthless moves, Casey, gone. DeRozan, you're gone. Valanciunas, gone. And we're going to bring these guys in, and we know there's an excellent chance they're only here for 1 year, but we're going all in. Hell of a year.
I was thinking about Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan and what they must be thinking watching the Raptors.
Oh, yeah.
One, there's obviously, and I'm sure there's inside the MLSE, there's both a friendly competition and camaraderie at the same time. I'm sure they would have loved to have been first based on what they had, but they had the ugly out, and now these guys are going through. I'm sure they're not mad, but I'm sure they're watching very carefully.
Yeah.
And it's not being lost on them in their Mitch Marner conversations,
mm-hmm.
what Jurassic Park looks like.
Yeah.
Hey, Mitch. Sure, Go for $10.5 million because I know there's going to be 100,000 people in the street if you go to Carolina.
Yeah.
I just know it.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of a selling point this is. Like, here's what the city looks like when you have incredible success, guys.
Yeah.
Hey, Andreas Janssen and Kasperi Kapanen, do you want to go make $400,000 somewhere else more? Or do you want to be part of this?
I think it's absolutely part of the full court press. And, you know, the funny thing that you see a lot, and you see this a lot on Twitter, is, I think it was Siakam said that more than talent what this team has is toughness. Mm-hmm. And then we see St. Louis and Boston in the Stanley Cup Finals, and there's a whole lot of toughness there. And, you know, then there's some snide shots taken at Kyle Dubas just by his approach to roster construction.
Okay, now I want to defend Kyle Dubas here.
By the way, very easy to do.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But I want to do it via a clarification of the term toughness, because the Raptors aren't necessarily physically tough. Kyle Lowry is, but he's 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard is. He's incredibly strong. But Marc Gasol's not a bruiser. He's not Steven Adams down there.
Yeah.
Pascal Siakam is not Tristan Thompson.
Yeah.
He's not in there punishing people. They're not a punishing team. We're not looking at the Knicks of the 80s or the Miami Heat of the early 90s. They have mental toughness. And I think any team can have that. What I really loved about this playoff run, and if I'm Masai Ujiri, here's maybe what I've learned. It was the same thing Alex Anthopoulos said he learned when he was trying to put together the Jays roster. In the end, players win. Not numbers, not strategy. Players win. Charles Barkley always says how he hates analytics because it doesn't take into account things like when you are in the playoffs and it's game six and you have a system built on 3-point shooting, well, everything tightens up a little bit. You know, you might be great in February, chucking up 23s.
Yeah.
You know, do it in game six of the finals and see if they're going in at the same rate.
And you look at Milwaukee, this was a team, no team was close in terms of amount of double-digit wins. So all the numbers were great, but the one thing it doesn't account for is what was Milwaukee going to do when they faced adversity? They didn't face any adversity this
year.
Like,
literally none. They hadn't even lost more than two games in a row all year. No major injuries.
Nope. Started at 7-0, 29-11. Then their one adversity, they lost to Boston in game one. Then they won the next four by 15 each.
Right. And also, I think you could equally say Boston lost those by 15 each because they're a team of head cases that just wanted I think they were worried they were going to win, because that meant they'd have to spend two more weeks together. So they just pulled the chute.
Wow. Well, we'll see.
I actually believe that's kind of true.
God. I mean, no team was more disappointed than the Celtics.
Yeah, I loved it. But anyway, I want to go back to, because I filibustered. I filibustered. What we learned from these playoffs and the NHL playoffs is that toughness comes in a variety of forms. It's great. You have to be physically strong. But mental toughness is really the thing.
And you already,
and experience. And experience helps to forge mental toughness. That stuff does matter.
And I'll give a micro to your macro.
Okay.
The 26-3 run by the Raptors, you know, they started the fourth quarter. First 3.5 minutes, there was no Kawhi Leonard on the court. That was Lowry, Powell, Ibaka, Siakam, and Van Vliet. And think of the toughness of Van Vliet, who's had horrible playoffs until the last three games. You know, or Kyle Lowry every now and then has to answer questions about what the hell's wrong with him. And, like, you know, and what they did was they turned a 5-point deficit, you know, became a 2-point lead. And they did a lot of that without Kawhi Leonard to start that fourth quarter.
I think that's why that 26-3 run is so magical, because it was ignited by the greatest player in the world, but it was sustained by the unsung heroes of the team that had been so maligned up to this point. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to that toughness thing. Like Fred Van Vliet, everyone says he was, you know, how many times have you heard people say it? He's the bet on yourself guy.
Yep.
And how many times have you heard players on the team say, Fred Van Vliet helps me get through stuff? You know, I'm going through a slump or I'm not feeling good. Fred Van Vliet helps to pick me up.
Yep.
That's a certain kind of toughness.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the reasons we love these Raptors is because, more so than Golden State, who have basically cruised through everything.
Yeah.
This team has slugged their way to this point.
Oh, my God, have they ever. I mean, you know, you look at some of the core of this team, what they slugged through year, you know, over the years, and then down 0-1 to Orlando, down 2-1 to Philly, down 0-2 to Milwaukee, you know, down 18-4 in this game to Milwaukee. And, you know, they found a way to battle back through it. It's one of the reasons why, if you think the Raptors could beat Golden State, is, you know, they've been able to handle tough moments like this and be able to rise above it.
You ready for my Oprah observation?
Yep.
So Kawhi's in the huddle and they're 15 down. This is just before they go on the run.
Yeah.
And he gives the message to the team to enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
To live in the moment and enjoy what they're doing. And here's the thing. You can create toughness out of anger and the fear of losing, and it's sustainable for a little while. But the greater toughness is the one when you have joy for what you do.
Yeah.
And I think that was actually really wise of him to say. Like, if you sit there and you're scared you're going to lose and you try to crank up the effort, you make dumb mistakes. If you just sit there and play and know what do what you know how to do, way more likely to have good results.
I'm going to go for the... I'm going to go with a 31-year-old reference now.
Okay.
To add to that point.
All right.
Joe Montana, 49ers, Super Bowl against Cincinnati, the one where they're down with a couple minutes left to play.
Was that the Icky Woods year?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the Icky
Boomer
Woods year.
Boomer Esiason?
Yep, Boomer Esiason. Oh, yeah, yeah. If you want to do late 80s Cincinnati Bengals, I'm here for that.
Chris Collinsworth?
He was gone by then.
Tim was he Crumbine, gone by then?
He was, no, mm. He was gone by then. So in the final huddle where they need a touchdown, Joe Montana huddled, you know, this guy huddled everyone in, and he goes, "Hey, look over there." And they go, "What?" And it was John Candy in the crowd. And Joe Montana was like, "Wow, look, there's John Candy." And everyone else talked about it afterwards. Everyone got really relaxed because the leader of the team is relaxed and having fun, and it translated to the other 10 guys on offense. So you're right. What Kawhi Leonard did there was a really smart thing to do. Just calm everyone down. Enjoy this. Have fun. Take joy in what we're doing.
You know, I don't want to knock DeMar because everybody's doing that for us. And we love him. And it's not fair.
I think a lot of people are going to his defense. And by the way, here's the criticism of DeMar. He's not Kawhi Leonard. Guess what?
Yeah.
Most people aren't.
But I will say that the team under his leadership felt like it got tight.
Yes.
That there was a fear of losing, that things were slipping away and things would get frustrating fast.
Yep.
You really saw that against Cleveland the year they got swept after that game one.
The last 5 minutes of game one.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? You could just feel that it wasn't joy on the court or this is fun. I think we have a chance to knock off the number one team.
Yeah.
It was, oh my God, we failed so many times and we're going to fail again.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was the genius of Masai, to go back to him, was to just, you just needed new bodies, you just needed new blood. And it really went to Gasol and Danny Green. And they've got a lot of new faces. Even Pascal Siakam, I think, counts because he's so young.
Well, he's a new face because he didn't start in the playoffs.
Right.
Last
like
year.
That wasn't his run.
No. One point I want to get to, just the improbability. Every championship team, there's all these crazy things that have to happen. Even Golden State, having the Steph Curry injuries in college dropped him a spot or two. And the fact that teams didn't take him. And the fact he was injured early on, it meant that Golden State had a lot more money to spend. And, you know, a lot of things have to happen. But are we here right now if in May of 2017, Zaza Pachulia doesn't injure Kawhi Leonard in game one of the Western Conference Finals, Spurs and Golden State? Because that started the ball rolling of the distrust between Kawhi and his camp and the Spurs. Are we here now without that?
No, and it's a great example of the butterfly effect.
Yep.
I remember at the time thinking this is so sad because I wanted the Spurs to beat the Warriors.
Yeah.
Who didn't? It's hard to think of the Spurs as underdogs, but at the time they were.
They were.
No, there's no way. And I guess basketball is just so cruel. If you don't have the best player, you don't have a chance. And you can do everything you want and every system in the world. And what do we learn from Milwaukee? They had a great player.
Yeah.
But he didn't play like the best one.
They
had more good players. They had, in theory, a better system, although we'll get to Nick Nurse in a second. But their star lost to our star.
Yep.
Not to oversimplify it, but isn't that kind of it?
That's what happened. Absolutely. And that's why if you want to, like, I'm picking Golden State in seven. I'll explain why later. But
I don't want to. I don't
want to
do any predictions because I don't want to hear any negativity.
Okay, well, I mean, but
I'm covering my ears. If you want, I'll leave the room and you can tell the audience directly.
But if you want to pick the Raptors to win, and it's there's such an easy path to it. They have home court. They get all this time off to rest Kawhi Leonard. They've got the best player. You can go a long way if you've got clearly the number one player and that level of defense. You know, that will carry you. And think about who the Raptors beat. They beat a really good Philly team, you know, with a lot of legitimate stars on it. They beat the Milwaukee team that had the most impressive run in the regular season. Hell, they had the most impressive run in the postseason through the first two rounds. They swept Detroit. They killed Boston. And then the Raptors beat them in six. They beat them four in a row, which hasn't happened before. So there is a lot of ways you can point to the Raptors and go, yeah, they're going to beat Golden State.
So I want to talk quickly about coaching, and then I guess we can move on to some other stuff because we do have other things to cover.
Yeah. We got my top five. We got listener questions.
I owe Nick Nurse an apology.
Okay.
Because, well, maybe I don't, but I think I do. In that I was suspicious. I thought he might be the weak link out there, that as they got deeper and deeper into the playoffs, I didn't think he'd get outcoached by Brett Brown.
Yeah.
I was pretty sure he'd get outcoached by Mike Budenholzer, and the opposite proved to be true.
Oh, yeah.
Budenholzer had a system. He didn't make adjustments. Giannis didn't play enough. Hello, Mike Babcock. And Nick Nurse made the switch to put Kawhi on Giannis.
Yep.
Which was, it's not like an insane move, but it was a different philosophy, and it changed the entire series.
Yes, it did.
The adjustments that Nick Nurse made and the even keel that he kept his team on won them this series. I think that if, this may be a controversial statement, but if Kawhi is the absolute number one, I actually think Nick Nurse is the second most important reason they won.
I'd go Lowry 2, Nick Nurse 3.
But Lowry would be the other candidate, but just I think that he just coached a great series.
He was fantastic. 100%. Absolutely. By the way, is Kyle Lowry the greatest Raptor of all time? Do we save that for another day?
Yeah, let's save it for another
day. Save it for another day.
Let's save it for another day. Whichever way the series goes, it feels like that's a post-mortem kind of question.
Yeah. Now, I got a little just...
Or post-Victorium.
Exactly.
It's not a word, but...
It's not. A little message to everyone out there. We like one of our sponsors is Seat Giant and seatgiant.ca. If you're going to go to these Raptor games, you're going to need all the savings you can get.
$100,000.
What?
One of the tickets is going for $100,000 on StubHub.
No, it's not.
Look, I read it online.
Okay.
It must be true.
Okay. It's going to be, you're going to be spending, if you want to sit courtside or near there, you're five digits. Seatgiant.ca. And if you use the discount code Bob and Matt at checkout, you'll save some money. You'll get a percentage off. We get a little bit of that kickback comes here, which is great. The podcast ain't free to do. Seatgiant.ca. They stand behind the customer experience, Canadian owned and operated company. You want to go to listener questions? You want to go to some top fives? What do you want to do?
I don't know. You make the call, buddy.
Okay, we'll do the just because I'm seeing it right here. And by the way, some of the listener questions, we got to get to at least one of Buffalo Phil's. Plus, someone wrote in about how is the Mackowitz family doing with their search or for their dog.
Do you want to do that right now?
Yeah, let's get to
Kim Alexander. Yeah, said, Kim Alexander. How's the search for the dog coming?
Yep, I'm curious for an update on the Mackowitz's new dog. How's it going, Bob?
So Sandra and I, both of us, have split up the research duties because Charlotte has a allergy.
Yeah.
So there's a very specific list of dogs that we could actually get.
Yeah.
We've narrowed it down to the Australian Cobber dog.
What the hell's that?
Exactly. There's, I think, only 60 breeders in the world for something like that.
What?
There's one in Ontario, but there's not another litter coming until 2020 at least.
Okay.
So we found another one in Alberta. So we started to plan a family trip to fly to Alberta to get this dog. We think it's going to be in October. So we're telling Charlotte, okay, I think we found the dog. And do you know what she says?
What?
I want a cat.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
She goes, I like dogs, but I think I want a cat.
Oh. So you did all this research, found this diamond in the rough breeder in Alberta, and you're setting up a trip, and now it's going to be time to get Garfield.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So where do things stand now? Is dog
they're in limbo? They're in limbo. We're yeah.
Yeah.
We're on hiatus.
You're on
with this decision.
You're on dog hiatus.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
By the way, that is pretty luxurious. Just we're gonna fly to Alberta to get a special
it's
dog.
For the kid.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would have eaten bologna sandwiches. And the dog ain't cheap.
No.
I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
But I was going to have bologna sandwiches for a year so my precious daughter could have a dog, which is something she wanted more than anything in the world. She spent some time with her friend Lily, who has a cat.
Uh-huh.
She wants a cat.
By the way, you should send Lily a little care package because a cat is a lot easier and less expensive than a dog.
I could never have a cat.
Why not?
I hate cats.
Why do you hate cats?
I have no respect for cats whatsoever. Condescending.
You got to work for the love.
Stuck up.
No. Dogs belie such a level of insecurity. Please love me, even though I don't have to do much. Cat, you got to earn that love. You got to earn that respect.
Whenever I see people who really, really love cats, you know what that tells me? Mm. They don't like people.
I love people. I love kitty cats. I've babysat for friends and family's cats in the past.
They want a friend who can justify their own desire to not talk or share their stuff with anybody.
Bob, you just said
you
said you don't go to the house. How much do you like people?
Yeah, because I'm into the house. I like the people in the house.
You'd be perfect.
The Makowicz family is a very, very small circle.
It's a cat's perfect. It'll be with you the whole time.
We're like a crime family, the Makowicz family.
Oh, God, I hope you get a cat.
I could never.
Meow. I love
No way. What do you... Okay, name one thing you love about them. And don't tell me their independence, because it's indifference.
I'll throw that one to the... the fact I don't have to pick up their poo. That's a good one. Let me tell you, my best friend Dave Peary, we've been walking down the street. He didn't stop and take a dump on the road and I had to pick it up. Man's best friend, my ass. Mm-hmm. I like cats. They're fun. They're curious.
They're not fun.
They got great personality.
They're not fun.
Yes, they are.
They're totally. What do they
do? I grew up with cats. I had plenty of fun cats in my life.
Did you ever see Instagram videos of cats jumping off the dock at the cottage to chase a frisbee?
No.
Right.
But guess what?
What?
When you do that enough, that dog, you got to go to the vet because that water gets in their ears and that's $10,000 right there.
Yeah, like a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Get a cat, save some money. Every parent must be $500,000 in debt. I'm convinced
of
it.
At least.
I am convinced.
I think actually the number they've worked out is it costs $17 million to raise a kid in today's world.
That's not true. You read that next to the $100,000 for a ticket.
I made the
job. What website are you on?
$17 million. Who has $17 million?
You're clicking
million
on the right side to see what the cast members from Eight Is Enough look like today.
You know what?
That's a musty reference
that,
by
that,
me.
That, you're really...
Should have gone with Friends or something, you know? Eight Is Enough. All right.
All right. So you wanted to do, as one of the world's funniest people yourself, Matt,
that's right.
Do you want to do? Now, this goes back to our discussion of last week, I believe it
yeah,
was.
Of last week. I was talking about Adam Sandler still throwing a fastball on Saturday Night Live. And they're just going to be thinking, who are the funniest people working today? Much like how you know Kawhi Leonard is the best basketball player today. That could change. Same thing with this list.
Now, you and I debated, hence mm-hmm. the list, that you put John Mulaney on it.
Yeah,
John. And I said he hadn't done enough.
Mm-hmm.
That he was extremely funny, and I love his work, but until he stars in a show or a movie that's good,
yeah,
you can't call him the funniest person on earth.
And to me, my difference is just who right now is cranking out the A-plus stuff.
Okay.
First, I want to give my apologies. Comedian Hasan Minhaj, Ali Wong, John Oliver and his team.
Isn't it Manji?
I think it's Minhaj. M-I-N-H-A-J. Minhaji. I might be. Listen, I screw up names. You don't have to, you know... from Caucasian to everywhere else, I screw you up. Ali Wong, John Oliver and his team, Adam Carolla, Jimmy Kimmel, Larry David. Love them all, but they didn't make my list. But okay. That was my, just those are the ones. Coming in at number five, Bob, because
mm-hmm.
every time I read it, it's still hilarious. The Onion. The Onion Twitter account, every time I see it, it's still knocking out fastballs. It's still really socially relevant. It is funny. It still is biting. That's hard to do.
The single greatest piece of comedy in my life is the post 9/11 edition of The Onion.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody was ever more relevant or funny. Okay, mm-hmm. The Onion. Good
The Onion,
choice.
Number five. Number four, Kate McKinnon. Mm-hmm. Funniest member of SNL. If you are the funniest member of SNL, you're going to get a little extra shout out. She is so good, you know, and it doesn't matter. Like, she's working opposite Paul Rudd or Adam Sandler, whoever it is, and she's still just, they're equal, and you can see sometimes she's making them crack up. So, Kate McKinnon at number four.
She's a killer.
Yeah. Number three, season 22 of a TV show. Hard to be funny. Go back and watch South Park, and they do a great two-parter on climate change. That is brilliant because they find a way to talk about climate change without it being preachy or without it being this or that. They nail it. So Matt Stone and Trey Parker, number three on my list. Watch season 22. It is so, smart. It is so funny.
Could take it just a quick sidebar.
Yeah.
I love you, Matt.
Yeah.
You are such an old man. So today, the most relevant thing happening today are all things that you liked from 20 years ago. The best stuff today, the cutting edge, funny stuff, The Onion, Saturday Night Live, yep. and South Park.
Yes.
Nobody's putting it down like those guys, nope. leading the vanguard.
Nope. They right now. Season. I will put season.
Is this like your Arcade Fire tape in your car?
Seasoned. Go watch season 22 of South Park. Number two, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Okay. Was a just, and this past year, another great year of Veep.
I think it's
season.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus. But
Julia
Louis. Okay. Louise? Yeah, I don't think it's Louise, but anyway.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus as, you know, the star of Veep. Fantastic. And also a lot of pathos in the final couple episodes. So number two. And then number one, the one I said before, John Mulaney. No one is making me laugh harder right now than his stand-up specials. They are fantastic. So that, for me, is my number one.
So the best new things in the world are four things that have been around for 20 years and John Mulaney.
Bob, if you you might not appreciate the idea of reinvention mm-hmm. or the ability to adapt with times, I do. That's the difference between you and I.
I think that, once again, it shows you've really taken the spirit of the question and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about some new movies that I love. There's this one about this mob family.
Yep.
They're Italian. The father gets gunned down. The youngest son takes over.
Yep.
It's great. It's called Godfather.
Is there amazing. A new is there a new some, version that came out in 2019?
There's some great new actors
is,
in it.
Is Al there Pacino. A new version that came out this year? Because none
have of, you seen the new movie about the shark? It takes over like the swimming around.
The Meg? I saw the Meg. The Meg wasn't back.
Is Jason the Meg okay? Statham,
take it for what it is, and the Meg ain't back.
All right, let's do what the hell are we doing here? We got a lot of top fives and some listener questions.
Yeah, we got some listener. Oh, well, we got
John Mulaney is awfully funny.
Yeah,
I will grant you that. He probably makes me laugh more than anybody else right now, except for John Oliver.
Yeah,
Jimmy Kimmel was an interesting choice.
Well, Kimmel's still doing really good stuff, and a lot of the online stuff and the lying news, and you know, like he's still putting out. Really good, still putting up really good stuff.
He produces a lot of stuff too.
Yeah.
He's a real one man industry in a way. He's kind of like Seth MacFarlane without the smug.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a perfect way. That's an absolute perfect way to put it.
He's lovable Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah. Buffalo Phil writes in, to what extent do you shape your own destiny and how much of it is down to fate? I mean, you could use that for the Raptors because, you know, some of it is Masai Ujiri. He got just as lucky as he got smart. He wanted to trade Kyle Lowry, but James Dolan was like, no, you've screwed me too many times, Masai. I'm not doing it.
Okay, so let me get the question straight so I understand it.
How much are you in control and how much is fate in control?
Mostly fate?
Yeah, well, here's how fate, yes. The bedrock,
mostly fate and then just a sidebar of self-deception.
No, I think there's still some. We still have some control of our own destiny. The bedrock, though, goes with fate, and that is we were born. I was born in 1975 in Canada, so that gives me a head start than if I was born, you know, 300 years ago, or if I was born in parts of the world that don't have the same economic and geographical advantages that we have here in Canada. So on that level. You know,
and then where and then in. Where are you born within the cultural
yeah.
strata of people here in Canada? I still think one of my favorite moments where it was pointed out to me quite gently by my wife what guy privilege is yeah. I remember I threw out to her once, I said to her, if you could live at any time during history, when would you want to live?
Yeah.
And without even pausing, she looked at me and she says, no, I'm a woman.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I guess I'm a real asshole for asking a question that only a guy would ask, saying, what would be the most fun time for me to live? When could I have the most fun? As opposed to, in this period, I'd be burned at the stake.
Yeah.
In this one, I'm somebody's property.
I will defend you here on this, Bob. You're a good person. You've been a good person your whole life. You were just sitting there asking a question. Do you know how hard it is?
Well, you could be a good person and be wrong.
Of course. But no, but when you said you're an asshole, I'm like, yeah. You can't. Do you know how hard it is to spend every second trying to be completely socially aware, woke, and have the proper level of nuance with everything? That's tiring.
Yeah, but you know what? Mm. It's even more tiring when people don't do it, and then they have to live in the shadow of the ignorance that's put on top of them.
No one is saying
like,
that.
What's more tiring, trying hard or having people not try and living with it?
I understand. I think you've been a little harder on yourself.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sitting there saying, you know, get out the... You know, I'm not going to whip myself. I'm not going to put on the hair shirt.
Self-flagellation.
Flagellation.
That's it.
But I just thought it was a really great example. It was a great point.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It shows how we have our unconscious biases. Mm-hmm. And it's very helpful when people can point them out in a way that, you know, makes sense.
You want a high five for being a white guy? Come on.
I don't think so. Let's do it.
Come on. Don't leave me hanging.
I'm going to leave you hanging on this
one. Oh, you're so... Anyway. So it starts with first, it starts with a lot of fate, and then it's, you know, what you do with it.
I also think that there's a certain kind of personal angle to this too, that, you know, you ask yourself, you're born, and I see like for example, Matt, you're a happy guy.
Yep.
And you come from a pretty good background. You got nice parents, but there's lots of people that come from a good background with nice parents who aren't happy.
Nope, it's true. Tons.
I think you're just a happy person.
Yes.
I don't think anybody had to teach you to be happy. I think that you were in an environment where maybe nobody knocked it out of you.
Yeah.
That's nice.
That's fair. Yeah, very nice.
But generally speaking, I think that you had a leg up on a lot of people because you were naturally kind of happy.
Mm-hmm.
I was born into a good house.
Yeah.
I have nice parents.
Yeah. We're
kind of a complicated family, but which one isn't?
Yep.
But I worry. I worry a lot.
Yes,
and,
you do.
And so that is something that I have to... It has given me a lot of success, mm-hmm. but I have not enjoyed that success as much as I could have.
Yeah, it's funny. If you were happier, you might have had less success, but you might have enjoyed your little bit less success more. Like it's an odd thing, isn't it?
It is an odd thing. Yeah. So back to Buffalo Phil's point, I think that we are kind of who we are and you work within the parameters of it. And some of it is right down to the chemistry of your brain.
Yep.
That you're just kind of born with what you're born with. However, the one thing I will say is everybody has the option to be better than they are right now.
Yes.
That is the one thing that is bedrock true, is you are never finished being better.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to take less to be better, which is complicated because we live in a society that teaches us better means more. But if you can actually strip it down and enjoy less, but with more fullness, that's success.
Yeah.
That's a hard one to accept, though, because we're all taught if you do things right, you should get all the good stuff.
But you got to recognize you're not going to get it. You're never going to get everything you deserve. You can do all the right things and... You know, you just have to sort of accept the fact that, you know, life isn't fair all the time.
You always say to me that you're like a leaf.
Leaf in the river, my man.
Leaf in the river, just rolling with whatever comes.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless you. From the Buddhists, you know, through mindfulness, you can look at a million things. And what they really want is your model.
Yeah.
The Matt model of leaf in the river.
It's
a great thing. I get a lot from it.
Yeah.
Watching you do it.
It's worked for me. Now I've also had, you know, advantages that have helped me allow to be in this role to be like, I'll say this, leaf in the river is easier when you don't have children because
totally true.
You know, so like I never, and this might shock you. I never give myself a ton of credit for the leaf in the river mantra because I realize that it is easier for me to embrace this ideology. Woo, I'm having a bad day with my words.
It's the allergies.
Yeah. I'm going on radio for 3 hours in a little bit.
Good luck with
people,
that.
Ah, they're used to it, please. they all know it. But yeah, like I never give myself full credit because I'm in a situation where it's easier for me to succeed with the leaf in the river ideal.
I was thinking the other day about Instagram and self-help and trying to create, like looking for programs to make yourself better. And, you know, I've done CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. I've done all kinds of diet stuff, which I never stick with, but I tried it. And I realized, you know, all those things work. There is truth. There is good to be gleaned from all of them. But I'm tired of being told over and over again that I'm not good enough, you know? Like, sure, I got health problems, and I've made some bad decisions, and I've screwed up a bunch of stuff, and I'm okay at some things, and I suck at other things. But I'm really tired of everywhere I turn, being told that I can live a better life.
Mm.
I don't want to live a better life. Yeah. I want to live my life and I want to enjoy it.
See, the thing is, you should, like, you know, you've got a great relationship with your family. And that says a lot about you. You got a nice home. You've had a really cool just employment history. You got a great daughter who's smart as hell. Like, if you just look at that and go, wait a minute, I'm winning. Could I be winning more? Sure. Could I be winning a whole lot more less? Absolutely.
By the way, you just John Mulaney'd that.
I did.
In the biggest way, did you mean to do it?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And the reason we don't notice is because there's a horse.
Yeah, exactly.
In a hospital.
And then people are like, wait, I've never, hey, by the way, look, there's me. I'm on CP24 right now.
And hang on. We're going to do this for the next minute and then we'll stop.
Yeah.
And there's Matt watching himself on the television.
Look at that handsome devil.
That's George Lagojanis.
Yes.
And I agree. He's a babe. Way like he's getting into Silver Fox territory.
George?
Yeah. He's still got the jawline, tons of hair, his glasses look good on him.
It's true.
Good looking guy.
Yeah.
Shipping magnate.
Yeah.
George Lagojanis.
Ooh, that is the name of a shipping magnate.
Right. We gotta get him one of those blue jackets that has a crest on it and gold buttons.
I could never pull that off.
You could. Trust me, you definitely could.
I would enjoy wearing it, but I wouldn't be able to pull it off.
Those now feels like a time to talk about Jeff Pollock, because I feel like Jeff Pollock probably has a blue jacket with gold buttons on it.
Of course he does.
He's a member of 35 different societies.
Of course.
One of them must expect gold buttons.
Oh, you know what? With Jeff Pollock, you're getting a gold button lawyer, because you're going to get a golden seal of approval.
Is he buttoned down?
Oh, he's buttoned down, but he also knows how to party and unbutton from the top.
I've seen him in a kilt.
Yeah, we both have. Jeff Pollock, he's our lawyer. I'll try to keep this real quick. If you need a lawyer, if you need law help and you're intimidated or nervous by it, go use the guy that we use. He's our lawyer, and he's super nice. He's super helpful, and he'll just make things more comfortable. And the world of law is one where I think we don't feel very comfortable with it because we don't know much about it. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollock.com. 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. And he also has a bunch of kids. I met him. Their kids are all nice and polite and whatnot. And, you know, that speaks to the man's character. So JeffPollock.com.
All right. So I've got a list of Raptors that I wish we were along for the ride.
Do it.
I was thinking about DeMar DeRozan, and everybody's sad that he couldn't be here for this.
Yeah.
Here's the list of the other guys that it's just too bad that they couldn't be on this edition of the Raptors. Okay. Special mention to Vashawn Leonard, because I think it's pretty hilarious that we had a guy whose last name was Leonard on the team who wore number two.
Yeah.
He wore number two, Matt.
Is that true?
Vashawn Leonard was number two.
That's crazy.
I spent many games watching him with Vince and Antonio Davis down thinking, oh, sweet God, he's our first scoring option. All right. Coming in at number five, Matt Bonner. Stretch four, lovable, wants to be Canadian. And he was the entry level for so many Raptors fans on TSN.
Yeah.
The ones who were really hockey fans, but they could get behind Matt Bonner.
Because gritty, hardworking, nice.
Red Rooster.
Red Rocket?
Red Rocket. That's red, it.
Yeah, yeah.
Red Rocket, Rooster. Red Rooster.
No, Red Rooster was like an old blues tune. And also pro public transportation. So that ain't bad either.
All right. Number four, Oliver Miller. The big O, back in the day, so lazy, but he could kind of shoot. Mm-hmm. And we'll never see his body type again in the NBA.
It's gone.
Like a barrel on two sticks.
I will say this. I think
he could actually fall asleep on the fast break.
He was committed to carbs. But I'll say this. You don't get to be in the NBA unless you're a hell of an athlete. When he was with Phoenix, I remember watching some series. Again, this goes back to watching basketball. Where he actually did a good job guarding Hakeem Olajuwon. So, Oliver Miller. Yep.
Jarrett Jack, who was a lovable, dependable guard. He was Chris Bosh's best friend. He was brought in because he was Chris Bosh's best friend.
Yep, Georgia Tech.
They played together at Georgia Tech.
Yep.
And he's also in the spirit of TJ Ford and Chris Childs and all those like small guards.
TJ Ford.
Right? TJ Ford. Hey, yeah. TJ Ford was a water bug, though. He could move.
He could.
He got drilled by Al Horford that one time and got the stinger. And then he was out for like practically a year.
Feels like there's about 100 guys you could say that about Al so Horford true. Doing to them.
That's fair. Yeah. But anyway, all of those small guards are basically Jared Jack. Number two, this is kind of a weird one here, but Rasho Nesterovic.
Rasho?
Yeah.
Super pale Rasho Nesterovich?
Because he was a certain kind of player from back in the day, the gigantic European center.
Yeah.
And when you and he was actually kind of funny in real life, but never said more than two words on the court. Just like a silent, lumbering Dungeons and Dragons character.
I got to tell you, I was not expecting a Rasho Nesterovich drop, but okay.
All right.
And who's number one?
All right. Honorable mention, too. Quincy Acey, Popeye Jones, Anthony Parker, Doug Christie's wife, Reggie Evans, James Johnson, because he would kill you, and Master P, Percy Miller, who somehow astoundingly I found out wasn't just a Raptor, but also a Charlotte Bobcat. All right. Number one.
By the way, Doug Christie's wife, that was a good, it's a good little, throw.
You could also have gone with Antonio Davis's wife.
Yeah.
Kendra.
Yeah.
Kendra Davis, who came on off the record and started ripping the team.
Yep.
Wanted a broadcasting career. Well, come on, Kendra, grab a seat and tell us what you think about Antonio's teammates.
Those days before Twitter.
You know what's amazing? Okay, I'll get back to this in a second because I do want to do my number one Raptor I wish was along for the ride. Tracy McGrady. Tracy McGrady, to me, is the great missed opportunity of this franchise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Marcus Camby was a good player. He split, whatever. Chris Bosh went to Miami, you know, but there was nothing there.
Yeah.
Like, he's a great player, but, you know, he just would have been a good player on a bad team. But Tracy McGrady, if he would have just figured it out, he was better than Vince. Vince is a great player. Vince is going to be a Hall of Famer. But Tracy McGrady was the single best offensive player in the league at his peak.
Yeah. Now, if he had just, if things had worked out at a young age with him here and just, you know, better coaching and just a better support system, T-Mac is what could have been.
You know, and he turned out to be a great guy. We've interviewed him.
Yeah.
Amazing guy.
Like, and so great on media.
So good.
Yeah.
Chatty, personable, intelligent, but we caught him when he was 20 years old and he had Daryl Walker for a coach and then Butch Carter, who sued another NBA player for defamation.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like, we didn't exactly give him a good reason to stay.
No, the degree of difficulty was a little bit higher on him.
Daryl Walker, who told him as a young kid that he would never have a career in this league. Daryl Walker, who doesn't, I don't even think Daryl Walker's allowed to own league pass. That's how far out of the league he is.
Not great for the motivational speaker. You don't want him on your Instagram.
All right, so
number one.
There was something I was going to come back to, but I forget what it was.
Yeah, it'll come back.
Yeah, whatever. If it comes back, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Did you know that Master P was worth like $100 million?
Oh, yeah. And wasn't he
no limits.
Ricky Williams' agent at one point?
Which ESPN actually dubbed the worst deal in football history.
Yeah, the Ricky Williams deal with the Saints was, it was so bad. Even fans who screamed that players are overpaid, Even the hardcore version of that fan was like, oh, come on, Ricky. Ricky deserves more money than this.
The genius thing about Master P was it was the only time anyone was honest about what the 12th person on a basketball team actually does.
Yeah.
What's the average court time over the course of an 82-game season for your 12th man?
A couple minutes a week in a blowout.
That much?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 30 seconds.
I said two minutes.
Average
a week.
It out versus all the DNPs.
Yeah.
Like, why couldn't you make Drake the 12th man?
He is.
He could shoot a little.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I think he's GM.
He's made as many shots as Danny Green has the last two games.
I'm not going to say anything negative about the team.
Nope.
Every series is a chance to turn things around. Look at Fred Sr.
Yep, exactly.
Can we agree to only call him Fred Sr. at this point? Because as Fred, he was pretty bad. But as Fred Sr.
He's been way better.
He's on fire.
I love the fact when Kate Burness interviewed him after, I think it was game five, and she brought up his kid, and he said, you know, is it your son? He helped motivate her. You know, what part did he play? And he's like, none. This is all me. My kid did nothing. I love that.
Isn't that good?
It was great.
He's funny.
Yeah.
He's really funny. And do you find he looks a bit like Drake?
I can't get past his neck beard.
He has a lot of hair down there.
Yeah.
He's like a hive of bees. You know, like when you see people wearing the beard of bees?
Yeah, he's got a little bit of Amish in him down there.
If he let it really, really go, he could totally go Brooklyn hipster band.
Oh, that or he's there raising a barn or churning butter. But, oh, absolutely. Like,
raising a barn sounds hard.
It does. It does.
Do we have anything to get to? I've got...
Wait, who's your number one?
Tracy McGrady.
Oh, yeah. One thing, shout out to the city of Toronto.
Oh.
No arrests.
I know. And isn't that something?
The best, yeah.
Shout out to the cops, mm-hmm. because I'm sure they could have made arrests if they wanted to be finicky.
Yeah.
Like people climbing up on top of buses and stuff.
Yeah.
I read about how they just asked them to come back down and people obliged.
Yep.
If they wanted to be totalitarian about it, I'm sure there could have been lots of arrests. Oh, absolutely.
Spare the law, letter the law. I'm sure they could have arrested a lot of people.
Shout out to the cops.
Shout out to the cops. Also, shout out to the people on condos, but really high up. My favorite image was one from probably like 40 stories up, and you could still hear the crowd celebrating. It's one thing, like, I love the, you know, on the ground shot, but for me, the perspective of just how big this moment was for Toronto was it's 40 floors up, and all you can hear is ringing joy. That was awesome. This city need and deserve this.
Okay, so let's make a deal here.
Yep.
If the Raptors lose, we'll do the follow-up post-mortem.
Mm-hmm.
Totally drunk. If they win,
even drunker.
Deal?
At the very least, a nice buzz, you know, because sometimes I do the pod and then I got to go up to TSN. And I mean,
we'll do it on a Friday. We'll do it on Friday or whatever. We'll do it after your show. We'll do it in the early evening.
But we'll
get a couple bottles of wine.
Sure. That's fine with me.
I hear you like it.
I've been every now and then. I'll say this because game one's not till Thursday. And then like, there's another time where there's like a couple days off.
Oh my God. The stretches in between. Seriously. It's like a semester.
Hey, do not complain. We need Kawhi as rested as possible.
That's a good point.
Okay.
That's
you want to treat this like an NFL schedule. I am down with that.
Do you think we'll see Durant back? I keep hearing reports it's an Achilles.
I keep hearing there's no such thing as a strain, that's a tear. I'm hearing we're not going to see.
I don't think so.
I don't.
And if we do, who comes back?
Yeah. Can I tell you my ultimate fantasy?
Mm-hmm.
My number one fantasy is Golden State wins the first three games without Durant. Then Durant comes back and the Raptors win the next four in a row with Durant playing like crap. Like I'm not going to
taking tons of shots.
I'm not going to lie. This is going to sound gross. I think I would pleasure myself to those highlights of watching Kevin Durant miss shots. That's how much I just can't. Anyway.
That's a good fantasy.
Yeah.
Are we running out of time?
We're done. We got 2.5 minutes.
Okay. Well, quickly, I put together a top five list of shows that people can watch.
Oh.
Now that Game of Thrones is gone.
Yeah, do it.
Number five, American Ninja Warrior is coming back.
So good. It's shaming. Best. It's great, but it's also shaming.
Oh, you know what? Did you watch the Titan Games, the Rocks version of it?
No.
It's okay.
Yeah.
The Americans, if you need a show to binge, but you've missed it because there are so many shows and you can't keep up, The Americans is actually really brilliant.
Tony Kornheiser's favorite show.
Oh, is that right?
He's in an episode.
Get out.
He's in a bar. You can hear him. I don't think you see him, but you can definitely hear him.
The new season of Rick and Morty is coming up soon. Ooh. So you can go back and watch all the old ones so you can be caught up for the new stuff. Dogs of Berlin, a show on Netflix that I don't think got a lot of pub. But if you're a sports fan and you love crime shows,
mm-hmm.
it's the story of a soccer star being murdered. And it's the tensions between the Germans and the Turks.
Oh.
Yeah, it's weird. You don't see a lot of crimes where the national soccer team is a driving plot point.
I thought Dogs of Berlin was the Mackowitz next story for getting a dog. Hey-o, callback.
And the winner, Cats of Berlin. And number one, go check out Fleabag. Its second season is now on Amazon Prime. The first season is absolutely genius. I haven't seen the second one. I heard it's even better. The best written show on television right now.
Fleabag.
Now that Veep is gone, Fleabag is the best written show on television.
I don't believe in corporate monolithic society, so I don't get to Amazon Prime. Yeah, never ordered anything from Amazon.
I know. Well, you're too busy enjoying South Park.
Yeah.
Season 20, that new show South Park that's just killing it.
It amazes me, Bob, where something is like, it was so smart and so relevant, and you think I'm talking about something from 1998. No, no, no. I'm talking about something from 2019, dealing with 2019 issues, Bob.
I get it, Matt, but my joke to you is that the only thing you would consider new is something that's been around for 20 years already.
I had a lot of a lot of the also-rans were, anyway,
whatever.
Whatever. The Raptors are going to the NBA Finals.
Why don't we try to, if we can, why don't we try to get together Friday and do a post-game wrap?
Sure.
We'll see if we can do it, okay?
Yeah,
we'll see if
absolutely.
It makes sense. All right.
Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cos podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.